everyone, and thank you for agreeing to participate in my Mindful Educators Essentials course. I'm enrolled in this course through the Mindful Schools organization. My previous experience is having taken the Mindful Fundamentals course earlier this year, and I realized that I'm going to have some assignments that I'm supposed to work out with colleagues or in the classroom. And since I'm taking this course over my summer vacation, I don't have those things available to me. So I thought this would be a great way to share some of the information that I'm gathering in the Mindful Educator Essentials course and to receive some feedback that I can hopefully use to take the course and to implement with my colleagues and students in the fall. The course is divided into 6 different modules, and my assumption is that there will be an assignment with each of those modules. The way the online course works, you can't unlock the next module in the sequence until you complete the first assignment. So I'm not exactly sure how it will go, but given the overview materials, I have reason to anticipate that there will be 6 different assignments. So I thought that what I would do is keep adding to a single audio file so that all of the course content and information will be included in one audio file. But I will provide timestamps so that you don't need to keep listening from the beginning. For instance, you probably won't want to listen to this information a second time. A little bit about my interest in mindfulness. I work with high school students in a public high school district. It's 2 high schools in one district, and we serve about 3,000 students in grades 9 through 12. There is a very, very wide socioeconomic range and quite a lot of other kinds of diversity in the population that this high school serves. Nearly everyone in the region that this high school serves attends the public high school. There are very few exceptions. And what I've noticed over the past several years, but particularly this past school year, is that students have come to me with overwhelming amounts of anxiety. I'm not a guidance counselor, and I haven't typically found that students come to me with very personal concerns, but this year was unbelievably different in students knocking on my door, sitting down, and then just exploding into tears or having a meltdown. And most of it seemed to be anxiety induced. Also, in group sessions, students would often start just venting about stress and stress factors in their lives. And I would let that go on a little bit because I think that sharing your stress and realizing that you're not alone in being stressed out is therapeutic to a degree. But then the critical question that I asked on a couple different occasions is, what tools and strategies do you have to deal with this stress? And I didn't get much of an answer. And sometimes students would say, oh, well, you know, it will be a little better. We have a break coming up. And I work to explain, well, a break is always nice. A break in your schedule is nice, but that really isn't a good thing to point to in terms of how to relieve stress and anxiety, because after the break, new things will just add up. You will never be able to get rid of the stress in your life. But you could develop some tools and strategies for dealing with those challenges when they arise. And they didn't seem to have much of that. So that's when I figured that this is the work I have to do, that I would like to be able to learn some strategies that would work for me and cultivate some lessons, techniques, tips, those kinds of things that would work with my adolescent students. And so I found the Mindful Schools program. And in this particular course, there is going to be a scripted sequence of short, about 15-minute sessions to do with students. And there's kind of a divide in the course between working with younger students and working with adolescent students. The first lesson I ever gave to my high school students was recommended for grades K through 2. So I don't necessarily think that strategies for younger students are not applicable to high school students. And I'm really looking forward to the content of this course. Week 1 practice assignment. The assignment is, what is mindfulness? The What is Mindfulness talk is meant to help you think about mindfulness in terms that can be shared easily yet meaningfully. If we don't thoughtfully refine how we describe mindfulness, we can find ourselves pulled down a rabbit hole of abstract explanation. This week, draw on what you took from the talk and describe what is mindfulness to another adult. Focus on being succinct, speaking in short, clear sentences that mimic the style of a short meeting or presentation. You are welcome to use what you heard in this talk directly, but also allow for your own voice and knowledge to come through. What is mindfulness? Even though this is a relatively new term that's become popular, and some might even argue has become trendy over the past decade or so, the concept is not a new one. Mindfulness is the ability to focus attention in the moment. And it can be applied very specifically, and the term can also mean something more broad. So mindfulness is one's focused attention, and mindfulness is also the general ability to focus one's attention. It's important to note that the practice or present state of mindfulness is always more important than the object upon which one is focusing or paying attention. The material, the content, the object, the point of the focused attention is never as important as the ability to do so. As an educator, I think of mindfulness as developing a capacity to respond to an event or situation rather than simply react to it. Responding means that you bring your values, a sense of calmness, a sense of having a goal or an objective in how you deal with a certain situation. You bring all of those things to the present moment. With a reaction, you don't do any of that. There's a stimulus and you just react. A response is more thoughtful and considered. And I think ultimately a response is more likely to bring about the results that we desire in a particular situation than a reaction is likely to garner. It seems to me that some important things to discuss in terms of mindfulness have to do with what mindfulness is not. With all of the popularity of mindfulness and mindfulness training, it's important to remember that mindfulness is not a cure for everything. Mindfulness is not disciplinary in nature. The point of it is not to teach kids how to behave or to make them behave. I think it's also helpful to note that even though mindfulness may augment a particular kind of therapy, mindfulness training is not a replacement for other types of therapies or even medications that may be prescribed depending on one's diagnosis, for example. And even though mindfulness can certainly be cultivated through a lot of other practices like yoga, meditation, prayer, mindfulness in itself is secular. It is not religious or spiritual in nature. And I think the recent developments in mindfulness have been to carve out the secular applications of mindfulness from some religious and spiritual practices. Certainly, you can cultivate mindfulness through prayer and meditation, but mindfulness is not synonymous with those things. If mindfulness is a particular way of paying focused attention, then I think a logical question would be, well, how do you do that? How do you get better at it? And the answer to that is practice. So mindfulness practice usually refers to a set of sessions. They could be every day, or they could be every few days or once a week. But the sessions are relatively short, and they're focused and invite a willing practitioner to engage in that focused attention for a short period of time, to reflect on what that feels like, how their body feels, what it feels like afterwards, and then to encourage increased practice through frequent engagement in mindfulness sessions, one can grow to cultivate a mindful mindset or a stance to nearly every situation in their life that involves bringing that focused attention to the moment. Mindfulness then can be a state of being mindful. It can be a trait or characteristic of a person. And it is also the term used to describe the practice of mindfulness. Hi, everyone, and welcome to week 2 of this mini mindfulness exploration. I'm really appreciative of the feedback many of you have given already, and I want to add that this should not be a stressor or feel like an obligation for anyone. So simply start where you are, use what you have, do what you can. This is my new mantra for resourcefulness. And, join in as your summer activities allow and as your interest urges you to participate. I feel like I've already received deeper and more thoughtful and meaningful feedback just from week 1 than I could have even anticipated. So I'm very grateful. For week 2, I'm going to repeat the final thought from week 1 and then move forward with some additional information. So at the end of the last recording, I stated that mindfulness is a term that refers to 3 different things. It's a state of being mindful. It's a trait or characteristic of a person. And it is also a term that refers to the practice of mindfulness. Many of your questions at the end of week one had to do with, okay, practice, what's the how? How does one go about that? I'm not completely sure that I will satisfy that entirely in this week's chat, but it is the trajectory of this series of recordings. We will move more deeply into practice as the course prompts me to go there. For now, I want to talk a little bit about the interconnectedness between those three things, the state, the trait, and the practice. The state of being mindful is an in-the-moment kind of definition. You're mindful now. You're mindful for this time in the present. While the trait or characteristic definition refers to a tendency of being mindful. And then there's the practice, and that's sort of the glue. That's how one makes the transfer. By engaging in a mindful practice, we can expand our capacity from being mindful for a set period of time to approaching all of our life situations and activities with a mindful mindset. And I think following that, there are two main questions that I would have. One is, why is that the case? And then the other is, well, how would you go about that? If you accept that as true or likely, how would you do that? So I'll address the why first. And the why has to do with brain function. And I think recent discoveries in brain function or recent acceptance of some theories about brain function have been instrumental in the popularity of this concept of mindfulness. One of the simplest ways to explain it is this last in, first out theory. It has to do with the prefrontal cortex of the brain. So depending on how much brain science you know about, my own understanding is basic. I would not say it's well developed, but there are different areas of the brain and they are responsible for different functions in our bodies. The prefrontal cortex, right in the front of the brain, right at your forehead, it's the place that you may massage when you're thinking very hard or where things seem very difficult. That is the last aspect of the human brain to have developed. It is responsible for very complex kinds of behaviors that we associate with humans. Things that we do not find very much or to a very great degree in other mammals. Things like planning, impulse control, organization, focusing, prioritizing, ignoring distractions, things that we often associate with a mature or grown-up individual and not as much with a child. We see these in children as developing traits. And the most recent research and studies in brain development and development of this prefrontal cortex posit this notion that this development of the prefrontal cortex is not really complete until sometimes as late as the late 20s. So while we may, you know, have these arbitrary ages that we decide a person is an adult, often in the Western world, you know, between ages 16 and 21, we have this idea that a person reaches adulthood. Brain research suggests that full maturity and development of this prefrontal cortex is not happening until much later than that. So a person may look like an adult, have adult responsibilities and privileges, but not really be fully mature in terms of this brain development. This research, the culmination of this research, has two main implications for child and adolescent development. First, it means that young people may need a lot more support in the maturation process than we may have anticipated, or we may give them grace to do. We may have expectations for young people, and particularly for late adolescents, then they're really capable of delivering in a lot of situations. And that may be because we're just rushing things, and it may be because traditional forms of support are not as available to young people in a busy, industrialized, highly commercial, moving very quickly environment that we have in the Western world today. Another implication is with this last in, first out way of looking at things, is that in situations of high stress, developments in the prefrontal cortex, which may be happening, developing over time, are the first to leave in those stressful situations. So a young person, in fact, all of us, when we face a very stressful situation, one of the reasons that we're more likely to react rather than respond with our logic and prioritizing and all of those things is because those older areas of the brain function are more powerful and they kick in, and we're not able to resist the temptation to yell and insult someone. We're not able to avoid distractions in a really noisy, chaotic, distracting environment because that prefrontal cortex is still the most vulnerable area of our brain in that way. When stressful situations arise, we do that fight or flight. We rely on those older areas of the brain. Because of brain function and how it works, the practice of mindfulness, the practice really of anything that you want to take from a state to a trait over short periods of time, many short periods of time in a controlled environment that feels safe, over a longer period of time, that practice will take you from a state of being mindful to a trait of being mindful in multiple situations, regardless of stress, anxiety, distraction, and so forth. I think it's helpful here to insert any sort of sports analogy or any other kind of habit-forming information that you may have gathered over your lifetime about, you know, practice makes perfect and perfect practice makes perfect, that if you repeat a behavior over in short periods of time over a long period, that is more likely to become part of who you are, a trait or a characteristic rather than a momentary state. As you know, my interest in this topic has to do with bringing some of this mindfulness discourse to teens in a public high school setting. And in an introductory lesson, I might ask adolescents some questions like, how many times in a day are you told to focus on something, to pay attention? How many times have you been called out for not paying attention? Do you find yourself in situations where you wish you could bring a greater amount of focus to whatever, you know, the object of your attention is? If you're working on homework or you're building something or you're paying attention to fine details of something, but you find yourself easily distracted by things in your environment, how many times has that happened? And I might ask them to just think about it, not necessarily reveal a ton of personal information. But it seems like a lot of the lives of adolescents have to do with this pay attention, concentrate, focus, especially in testing situations. How many times has a test caused anxiety days or even weeks before it actually happens. So it's not that there's just stress in the moment, but you know, this constant state of feeling under pressure or feeling inability to focus. We spend a lot of time expecting ourselves to focus and asking other people to do that. But how much time have we actually devoted to helping people understand how to do that better? And that's the second element that has to do with the practice. So we've addressed the why a little bit. What about this how? An effective mindfulness practice, one way to think about it, is like providing someone with a user's manual for their brain to be able to use it more effectively. And by applying short, controlled periods of mindfulness over an extended amount of time, we can actually get better at doing that. So a little deeper into the how, there are multiple points of entry for a mindfulness practice. Some of them, and I need to be very cognizant of the fact that some of my students may already have a highly developed ability in this area, and that it may come from a spiritual practice or meditation. Those aren't things that I can teach directly, but I think it's important to honor them and to maybe even provide students with an opportunity to explore how some of their current practices may be assisting them in that way. Even though we're talking about mindfulness, mind, brain function, mindfulness practice often starts with addressing the needs of the body. In working with younger students, mindfulness teachers will often talk about, okay, mindful bodies. I don't know if that's necessarily a good tactic to use with adults or teens, but really thinking about your body and developing a posture that does a couple of things. A posture that's conducive to effective blood flow to the brain, and a posture that results in easy breathing are both very important things to consider. Typically, the posture that's adopted for mindfulness practice is the sit, an upright seated position with your head really balanced over your shoulders, your neck nice and long, and that eases blood flow and breathing, and your feet flat on the floor, and you feel yourself supported in that seated position. In some cases, even that can be a challenge, and some people find a reclined position, lying down in not a cushy but a supported reclining position, is a way to feel like the earth is really supporting the weight of your body, and that you can breathe easily, and that you can just concentrate on how your body feels, that there are no stress or pain points. People with chronic pain may not find that the seated posture really works for them. That's the starting point for a mindful practice, is positioning your body such that you feel supported and comfortable, and you can observe how your body feels. And if you'd like to do some mindful practice, that is my mindfulness challenge to you for the week, is once a day. It could be for 2 minutes. It could be longer. Put your body in a mindful posture and scan your body to see how you feel. You might start with your feet and work up to your head and just observe. How do I feel seated or reclined in this way? How does my body feel? What areas feel relaxed? what areas feel pain or strain? You might work from your head to your feet. But practice putting yourself in that mindful posture as a beginning place for a mindfulness practice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mindfulness Week 3. This week, I will be responding to some of the questions and concerns that you expressed in your comments and feedback, and hopefully delivering some additional information that will be of interest to you. Several of you have asked about use of the term meditation in a public school setting. And my response to this is, I don't know what is protocol or what will be allowed or frowned upon in my particular school district. I think that many public school districts are using the term meditation. In the coursework that I've been pursuing, a word of interest to me is to sit. The sit, sometimes very casual terms are used to describe a posture of mindfulness. And another is just mindful practice. So I'll be trying out some different terms during weeks 3 and 4 and sort of getting a feel for how that works, if it seems natural to use those terms. All of this is really a rough draft for tips, techniques, and education that I hope to practice in the upcoming year. Another question had to do with multiple points of entry, and I will be addressing that during weeks 3 and 4. I've taken a little bit of time to develop the content for these 2 weeks because I think Week 4 especially will be getting into a series of sits or meditations that you could use for your own personal practice. We talked about practice being the vehicle that takes one from a state of mindfulness, being mindful in the moment or for a brief period of time, to the trait of mindfulness. The idea that you could carry this sense of mindful presence with you throughout all of your activities and interactions with others. And practice is the vehicle that takes us from the state to the trait. A mindful practice targets 3 particular skills or skill sets. One is the ability to focus. A second is the ability to regulate emotion. We talked about respond rather than react. And a third is a sense of self-awareness. These 3 skills or skill sets together, ability to focus, ability to regulate one's emotions, and a sense of self-awareness, combine to form this sense of self-regulation. And that is the descriptor that's often associated with maturity or a sense of personal independence. And mindful practice targeting each of those 3 areas can be that vehicle toward a sense of self-regulation. During this session, I'm going to provide some tips and a little bit of background regarding a mindful practice. And then week 4 will be divided into 3 different recordings, and each will contain a different mindful practice session. The reason I'm going to separate these 2 things is that I'm hoping to develop 3 mindful practice sessions that you could listen to over and over again. And I don't want to include background information because I think it can be a little bit annoying or unnerving to hear the background information every time. So the week 4 sessions will be discrete and distinct with no introductory information. It will all be contained here in week 3. Some tips to begin your mindful practice. First, remember that mindful practice is a practice. Be gentle with yourself, be patient and kind, and try not to get frustrated if you find yourself distracted or you find a practice of mindfulness very difficult. Lots of practitioners of mindfulness feel this way, and even accomplishing a regular habit is no insurance that you won't feel distracted or frustrated or find difficulty in a future practice, or when you sit down tomorrow, it won't be like when you sit today. So be gentle with yourself. At least in the beginning of a practice of mindfulness, it's helpful to find a quiet place away from other people and distractions as much as possible. This can be one of the biggest obstacles to a mindful practice, is to carve out quiet and alone time to get a practice started. But keep in mind that it doesn't need to be very long. Mindful sits can be even 1 minute in length and still be helpful. The practice sessions during week 4 will each be 5 minutes in length, or no more than 5 minutes in length. They will each be focused on a different point of entry. One is the body as anchor. A second is breath as anchor. And a third is sound as anchor. In hearing these 3 options, you may have an instinctive preference. And most mindful practitioners do find that they have a preference, a point of entry that they gravitate to above all others. I encourage you, particularly if you're new to mindfulness, to give each one of these entry points a try and really think about which one seems most comfortable and most productive to you. So I use that word anchor. And in this session, I want to devote the rest of the time to talking about this notion of anchor. An anchor is a means of finding a center or finding balance. An anchor tethers our practice. When we sit quietly away from other people and distractions, one very normal thing that happens is that our mind is suddenly crowded with all kinds of thoughts and worries. It just seems like creating that space of quiet and environment is like an invitation for everything to get very loud and messy and chaotic in our minds. Suddenly, every thought and worry that I've been suppressing for hours comes knocking and wants attention. An anchor can be a way of giving ourselves something centering and neutral on which to focus, as a way of improving that skill of focused attention. The series of three different anchors, body, breath, and sound, are a set of devices that you could use to create a center and something on which to focus your attention so that the barrage of thoughts and worries sort of stays on the periphery and you can work on focusing and in terms of taking that from a state to a trait, that ability starts to build and increase so that, let's say, you know, you're in your work environment and there's tons of stuff going on, but you have a task at hand that you're not ignoring everyone around you or all of the other concerns or long-term goals. You haven't forgotten about goals 2020 or whatever it is, but you're able to focus your attention on the task at hand. During the week four sessions, we will practice using three different types of anchors: body, breath, and sound. These are certainly not the only anchors that could be useful or effective. And as this session comes to a close, I always ask about comments, questions, and feedback. Some of the things I'm curious about are, do any of these three, body, breath, or sound, seem to be more appealing to you than the others? If you have been engaging in a meditation practice, a mindfulness practice in the past, do you have a preferred type of anchor or maybe some other anchor that I haven't mentioned in this session? And finally, I'm curious about how useful or helpful the tips that I provided are to you, or if there's anything else you'd like to offer up in the way of a tip for a mindfulness practice that would maybe give me something to think about in preparing future sessions. Thank you so much. I look forward to your comments, questions, and feedback. Mindfulness Week 4, Lesson 1, Body as Anchor. Sit in a chair and position your body in a state that's between alertness and relaxation. Your back is upright. Your head is balanced over your shoulders. Your knees are bent at a 90-degree angle, and your feet are resting flat on the floor. Fold your hands gently in your lap and take three deep, even breaths. Let your eyes close and your body be still and quiet and comfortable in your chair. Bring your attention to the top of your head. See if you can feel any little feelings or sensations. Maybe there are prickly or vibrating feelings. Maybe it feels tingly or soft. Just pay attention. Now we are going to scan our whole body for sensations. A sensation is anything you feel in your body. There's no right or wrong. Anything you feel is fine. You may not feel anything, That's also fine. Just be curious no matter what you feel. From the top of your head, move to your face. Pay attention to your forehead. Pay attention to your eyes. Relax your eyes. Pay attention to your cheeks, your nose, your mouth. Relax your jaw. Pay attention to your chin. Pay attention to the back of your head. Notice your neck and throat. Now bring your attention to your left shoulder. Notice your arm, your wrist, your hand, and all five fingers. Move your attention to your right shoulder. Feel your arm, your wrist, your hand, and your fingers. Pay attention to your back and feel for any sensations there. Scan your attention across your back and down your spine to your lower back. Feel any sensations in your chest, your belly. Notice where your body is touching the chair. Feel your left leg from your hip to your knee, from the knee to the calf, the ankle, your foot, and all of your toes. Pay attention to your right hip. Feel your right thigh, your knee, your calf, your foot, and all of your toes. Notice your entire body at once. Keep your attention on your entire body. Consider the following questions. What did you notice? What part of your body was easiest to feel? What was most difficult to feel? What felt relaxed? What was difficult to relax? How do you feel now? Week 4, Lesson 2, Breath as Anchor. Today, in our practice of mindfulness, we are going to focus on something that is happening in us all the time, our breath. Breath is neutral. It's not a strong emotion. It's just there. Every day, all day, breathing in and breathing out. We can find our breath anytime we want to focus our attention on something in particular, anytime we want to anchor ourselves, we can turn to the breath. Start by assuming a mindful posture. Sit in a chair with your back supported. Your knees are bent and your feet are resting on the floor. Your spine is nice and long and tall, and your head is balanced over your shoulders. Squeeze your shoulders up to your ears for just a moment, and then relax them. Sometimes that eases a little bit of tension. Start by taking one breath. Now, close your eyes and take one deep breath. Now take three breaths, just normal breaths. Don't change your breath. Now take three breaths, this time noticing where in your body you feel your breath. For example, you might feel your breath in your belly, in your chest or your throat, or you might feel your breath between your upper lip and your nostrils, where you can feel the air moving just there. Take three breaths, noticing where in your body you feel your breath, and follow that place for the entire three breaths. We will call that place you feel your breath most obviously your anchor. It is the place to anchor your attention when you're practicing mindfulness with your breath. Let's try this for 1 minute. You'll hear the chime at the beginning and end of 1 minute. You can practice using your breath as an anchor whenever you think of it. Try to remember to do this one time every day. Week 4, Lesson 3. Sound as anchor. Mindfulness is paying attention to whatever is happening in our experience. We can practice being mindful of many different things. Today we're going to pay attention to sound. We'll start by getting into a mindful posture. Take a deep breath and release it. And close your eyes or rest your gaze on something just a few feet in front of you. You're going to hear a chime. Let your attention go to the sound and simply listen to the sound from the moment it starts until it ends. Listen as closely as you can to see if you can hear the moment it ends. Notice how you feel. Was that challenging or easy? We'll try again. This time, notice if any thoughts arise while you are trying to listen to the bell. It's not right or wrong. Just notice what is happening. Now we'll listen to other sounds. Open your attention to the sounds around you. We'll sit for 30 seconds. You can use the sounds around you as an anchor for mindfulness. Maybe there are certain sounds in your environment that you hear regularly throughout the day. You can make an effort to let that sound remind you to take a breath and focus your attention on the sound. And relax your mind for even that moment. Another way to use sound as anchor is just to sit for 30 seconds or a minute and notice the sounds in your environment. It could be a peaceful environment, it could be busy or chaotic, but just sit quietly for a short period of time, letting sound be your anchor and practicing focused attention. We'll close with 1 minute for listening. You will hear the chime at the beginning and end of 1 minute.